Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giri Raj, Maharaj ki, Kaimitai, Go Premanandi. Okay. So tonight we will begin chapter 71, or canto 10. What is chapter 71 called? The Lord travels to Indraprastha, and we will go from verses 1 to 22. Thank you. The Lord travels to Indraprastha. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus heard the statements of Devarshi Narada, and understanding the opinions of both the assembly and Lord Krishna, the great-minded Uddhava began to speak. So, get the plastic quickly. Sri Uddhava said, O Lord, as the sage advised, you should help your cousin fulfill his plan for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, and you should also protect the kings who are begging for your shelter.
Devarshi Narada wanted Lord Krishna to go to Indraprastha and help his cousin Yudhishthira perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. At the same time, the members of the royal assembly strongly desired that he defeat Jarasandha and rescue the kings he was holding prisoner. The great minded Uddhava could understand that Lord Krishna desired to do both things, and thus he intelligently advised how both these purposes could be simultaneously accomplished.
Okay. So what are the points there? Any points?
As we mentioned in the last yesterday, Krishna is genius, and so is Uddhava. We can see here how he understands the mind of Krishna. So he advises Krishna to perform both the acts simultaneously.
Good. Anything else? Narottama Das Thakur sings Hari Guru Vaishnava. Bhagavata Gita. So Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava. So your life becomes successful when these three are pleased. When Krishna is pleased with you, when the Guru is pleased, your spiritual masters are pleased, and the Vaishnavas are pleased. Prabhupada says the barometer of bhakti, when you go before the deities, if the deities are smiling, if they're pleased with our service, then Prabhupada said that is how to measure your bhakti. If the deities are satisfied, if the deities are not satisfied, or the guru, or the devotees are not satisfied, then you have to reevaluate your devotional service. So, Uddhava, he is giving the advice that Krishna wants. Actually, Krishna can give this advice, so we all know that. But Krishna, he wants Uddhava to advise everyone. And Uddhava understands that Krishna must be happy, he must be satisfied. So that is how he makes his decision. He understands what is in the heart. We said this yesterday. There's a first-class disciple. First-class disciple, he understands what is in the heart of the guru, even before the guru desires it. So Uddhava understands what is in the heart of Krishna, even before Krishna desires it. He understands his intent. So the advice he gives will give pleasure to Krishna and give pleasure to the devotees. So this is his service. And he has become successful. So Bhagavatam is teaching us how to perform devotional service successfully. And also Bhagavatam teaches us what to avoid while performing devotional service. Many times there is the example of people who commit aparad. So that is also shown. The Bhagavatam shows us both what you should do, what you should not do. Any points? Okay. So, only one who has conquered all opponents in every direction can perform the Raja Suya sacrifice. O Almighty One, thus, in my opinion, conquering Jarasandha will serve both purposes. So, Aishwarya, you like to read them?
Sri Uddhava here explains that only one who has conquered all directions is entitled to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Therefore, Lord Krishna should immediately accept the invitation to participate in the sacrifice, but then he should arrange to kill Jarasandha as a necessary prerequisite. In this way, the king's request for protection would be fulfilled automatically. If the Lord would thus adhere to a single policy, namely, seeing that the Rajasuya sacrifice was performed properly, all purposes would be fulfilled. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of Lord Krishna's qualities is chatura, clever, which means that he can perform various types of work at the same time. Thus, the Lord could certainly have solved the dilemma of how to simultaneously satisfy King Yudhishthira's desire to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and the imprisoned king's desire for freedom. But Krishna wanted to give his dear devotee Uddhava the credit for the solution, and thus he pretended to be perplexed.
Thank you. So, what are the points there?
You mentioned yesterday that was the definition of being a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
Krishna always likes to give credit to his devotees. Like we see in the pastime of Vishnu, in the first temple. Then even in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is given the credit. So he always likes to give credit to his devotees.
Yeah. That's the nature of a pure soul. And it's one way of understanding how advanced we're becoming in Krishna consciousness. It's a very profound and easy way to understand. If you're advancing, you'll automatically like to give credit to others. You'll like to put others forward. If you like to come forward yourself, then we see that that may be an anatta, or false ego is there. But the nature of a pure soul, one who is not contaminated, then he wants to see others glorified. And Krishna himself is like that. That's a quality of Krishna. He likes to see others glorified. I mean, he can easily do it all himself. What's the problem? He can go and kill Jarasandha. He doesn't have to ask Uddhava his opinion. He can just say to everyone, this is what we're doing. Go off and kill Jarasandha. Go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. He doesn't have to, but... In life, it's more satisfying when we purify our consciousness and we like to put others forward. If you want to take the credit yourself all the time, then that's not pure consciousness. Pure consciousness is different. And Krishna himself, because he is pure consciousness, Chaitanya, which means pure consciousness, then Krishna himself is like that. So it's automatically within his personality. He likes. And therefore, out of all qualities that Krishna has, his greatest quality is bhakta-vatsala, which means he protects the devotees. He likes to glorify the devotees, as opposed to being, even though he is the Lord himself, and he can't help but be the center of attention and the most qualified personality and the sweetest personality and the most attractive personality. But still, even in that position, he likes to give credit to the others. Whenever he sees some good quality, then he likes to amplify that or make everyone focus on that. So you see here with Uddhava, then Krishna is giving him the opportunity. So we should also give others the opportunity. When we're young devotees, our consciousness is still very much mixed with anarthas. So we like to put ourselves forward. But as you get more purified in devotional service, then you'll see a change in consciousness. And that change, that's a healthy sign of advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, any points? Okay. By this decision, there will be a great gain for us, and you will save the kings. Thus, Govinda, you will be glorified. So what does Govinda mean? Gives pleasure to the cows? Brahmanas? Gopis? Yeah, who else? Senses? Prabhupada says land, Govinda. When it gives pleasure to it, Prabhupada says, cows, the land, and the spiritual senses. That is Govinda. So every time, now you see in the Bhagavad Gita, whenever Sanjaya, he uses a particular name, or Arjuna addresses Krishna with a particular name, or Krishna addresses Arjuna with a particular name. It's not haphazard, or it is not random, or it is not unthought of. It is always very precise. The names are perfectly chosen. So here they say the name Govinda. Govinda means one who will satisfy the senses of the devotees. So Krishna is being glorified for this quality he has. He likes to satisfy the senses of the devotees. So 20,000 kings are being held captive by Jarasandha. So if Krishna saves them, he'll give satisfaction to all of those kings. They'll become indebted to Krishna. They will accept Krishna as their master. So therefore, he is being glorified by Uddhava, saying, you will become Govinda. Your name, Govinda, will be more enhanced. So he's encouraging Krishna to go and save the kings. Krishna always wants to satisfy the senses, the spiritual senses of the devotees. But we have to reciprocate with Krishna on the spiritual platform. I remember my spiritual master said to me, I hadn't been a devotee very long, maybe 2 or 3 years or something. And he said, you have to learn to serve the guru on the spiritual platform. Because quite often when we do service, it's on the material platform. We're motivated. Now, we're serving guru, or we're serving devotees, even serving Krishna, the deities. But there is motivation there. We have other things in our consciousness. But when you serve the guru or Krishna, then it has to be done in the spiritual senses, eventually. That's what we're aiming for. And then Krishna can reciprocate properly. Otherwise, Krishna cannot fully reciprocate with the devotee. Okay. The invincible King Jarasandha is as strong as 10,000 elephants. Indeed, other powerful warriors cannot defeat him. Only Bhima is equal to him in strength. Chandan, you like to read that?
Shridhara Swami explains that the Gandhas were extremely eager to kill Jarasandha, and thus to caution them, Sri Uddhava spoke this verse: Jarasandha's death would come only at the end of Bhima. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti adds that Uddhava had previously reduced this from the Jyoti Raga and other astrological scriptures he had learned from his teacher, Vrsta.
Any points there? So Uddhava is saying only one person can kill Jarasandha. Actually, more than one person can kill Jarasandha. It's not that Bhima is the only one who can kill Jarasandha, but Uddhava understands this is the desire of Krishna, that Bhima is made famous for being the strongest personality. Actually, Bhishma is more powerful than Bhima. We'll see that when the pastime of Krishna killing Shishupala is there. I told you that story. Remember the story? Shishupala is insulting Krishna. So then, Krishna had, you know, when you chant japa, you have those beads, the counting beads, like this, right? So Krishna had some counting beads. Because he said, Shishupala can give 100 insults. But after that, I mean, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that shows that Krishna is very tolerant. You know, you take insult 100 times, that's very tolerant. So Krishna was counting. Right. And then Bhima, when Shishupala was making these insults, he wanted to get up. He was sitting on his throne. He wanted to get up and go and smash Shishupala. And that's how a devotee feels. If Krishna is being insulted or the devotees are being... we want to respond. So he wanted to go and smash him. But Bhishma was sitting next to him, and Bhishma had his hand on top of Bhima's hand. And Bhima was trying to get up. And Bhima is as strong as 10,000 mad elephants. But he couldn't even move. Bhishma was just holding him like that, with one hand, just holding him. Strongest man on the planet, but he had him with one hand. And he said, just wait. He said, Krishna has his plan. Just wait. So actually, there are others who could have killed Jarasandha. But Krishna wanted to glorify Bhima, Bhimsen. So then Uddhava understands that's his desire. So he's saying, according to the Jyotish, because Uddhava's guru is Brihaspati. Which planet does Brihaspati live on? Jupiter. Yeah, the one we call Jupiter. Guru. That's where Brihaspati lives, that's his planet. Shukracharya, he lives on? Yeah, Venus. Shukra. Yeah, Venus. Venus is the brightest planet in the sky. Jupiter is probably second brightest. Very bright. I'm not sure where they are at the moment. At the farm you can see them. You can see all the planets, but I haven't been watching so much lately, so I can't remember who's where. But Jupiter is a very bright planet. And this is where Brihaspati lives. And he was the guru of Uddhava. So he taught him Jyotish. So if you learn Jyotish, you become very learned. So he said, according to the Jyotish, it says, Bhima will be the one who will kill him. Bhima will kill. This is called destiny. I remember my Guru Maharaj, the last Vyasa Puja, I think. One of the last Vyasa Pujas, he was on the planet. Then he said, destiny is Krishna. Or fate is Krishna. In other words, what is destined to happen, that cannot be changed. So others could have killed Jarasandha, but Bhima was destined to. So sometimes in your life, as a devotee, things are destined to happen. So you can try to change it. But you can't change it. Because if Krishna wants something, then that's it. That's going to happen. So you can try to change. Oh, I don't want this. I'll get this devotee to do it instead. But no, that's not possible. Because destiny is Krishna. And Krishna will arrange those things. Just like my Guru Maharaj, he's with Prabhupada in Mayapur. You know the story? And he said to Prabhupada, maybe you should go and preach somewhere else, because he was preaching in America, but there were some problems with the Radha Dhammadapa. A lot of other devotees were complaining because the Tamakrishmaras and the Radha Dhammadapa Brahmacharis, they would come through a temple, and then all the Brahmacharis in the temple would get on the bus and go with them. And their temple presidents were complaining to Prabhupada, how can we run a temple? Every time the bus comes in, they all jump on the bus and they leave. So Tamakrishmaras, he wanted the whole ISKCON just to be Brahmacharis and sannyasis. Right? And he actually said to Prabhupada, we have to keep the women out of the temples. No brahmacharinis. Right? He said this to Prabhupada. He's trying to get all the brahmacharinis out. And Prabhupada wouldn't let him do it. He said, no. He said, they have to be brahmacharis and brahmacharinis in ISKCON. So, Prabhupada, because it was a problem, it was like friction between temples and the preachers. So then Tamal Krishnamurti said, oh, maybe I should go and preach on the moon.
China.
And then he said, or China. And then he left. Right? And then next morning, Prabhupada said, go and get him. So he came back. And actually, when the devotee came, said, Prabhupada wants to see you. He said, no, I don't want to go and see him. Because he knew what was going to happen. So he came in, he offered obeisances. Prabhupada was sitting there, and Prabhupada said, you said that you will go and preach in China? He said, Prabhupada, I was just joking. Prabhupada said, I did not take it as a joke. He said, Krishna spoke through you. And he said, no, no, I can't go because I have the Radha Damodar Party. We're doing, they were the biggest book distributors in ISKCON. And Prabhupada said, I'll give you two choices. You go and preach in China, or I take away all of your services and you sit in my appointment and you chant Hare Krishna. They were the two options Prabhupada gave. So then Tamal Krishnamurti realized the only way to please Krishna is to please Prabhupada. So he said, Prabhupada, whatever you want, I will do it. Guru Kripa Prabhu, he was a Swami as well, he was in the room. He said, Prabhupada, I'll go to China. And Prabhupada said, no, I want him to go. So this is called destiny. Destiny means if Krishna wants you to do something, you cannot get out of it. You have to do it. If Krishna desires that, you have to do it. You can't leave, or you can't change. Even over the years, like I've been there 11 years now, down at the farm. I went through some difficult times. You know, my first marriage finished, and I lived there by myself. In the house by myself for 18 months. You know, it was like some austerity I had to go through. And then in my heart, sometimes I thought, I don't want to be here. Too austere, too difficult. I want to leave. I sometimes think like that. But every time I want to leave, then Krishna does not allow it. He makes arrangements. Or then someone comes and says something encouraging, then I think, oh no, I will stay. So Krishna has his plan. So if Krishna wants you to do something, you can't not do it. You can not do it, but if you do that, then everything will become very problematic. If you go against Krishna's will. So destiny is Krishna. So only Bhima was destined to kill Jarasandha. Other people could try to do it, but it would not work. So, any points? Ashwari, you had a point.
Wasn't Tamal Krishna later on very thankful to Prabhupada that he was sent to China?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he was happy. Prabhupada said, I want to go to China. I think it was 75 or 76, 75 or something. But then he went and did some research, and the communist government was very strong at the time. And he came back and he said to Prabhupada, he said, actually, it's dangerous at this point. But, you know, communist, it was like a strong hold. Prabhupada said, wait 2 years. So then he waited till Prabhupada left the planet. I think the first time it was early 1978. Like that. And Prabhupada actually said, he said it will take 40 years for China to open up. And it's been 40 years, I think, since Prabhupada left, 77. So 42 years. So it's only now, and you see now it's opening. My godbrother, Radha Charan Prabhu. Yeah, you see on Facebook? And, you see like sometimes they have the festival, there's like thousands of Chinese devotees. Yeah. So now it's opening, but they still have to be very undercover the way they do it. They don't dress like devotees. And, you know, they have to be. It's dangerous. China is dangerous. if they find you preaching, they can, you know, dangerous place. Okay. He will be defeated in a match of single chariots, not when he is with his 100 military divisions. Now Jarasandha is so devoted to Brahminical culture that he never refuses requests from Brahmanas. So, Manakshi, you want to read them?
It might be argued that since only Bhima could equal Jarasandha in personal strength, Jarasandha would be more powerful and supported by his huge army. Therefore, Uddhava recommends single combat. But how could Jarasandha be persuaded to give up the support of his powerful army? Here, Uddhava gives the view that Jarasandha will never refuse a request from Brahmanas since he is devoted to Brahmanical culture.
Any points?
We see the ancient culture where even the demonic people were respectful to Brahmanas.
Even the which?
Demonic people like Jarasandha were respectful to the Brahmanas.
Mm.
Brahmanas had that cages because they were considered pure.
Yeah, you see all the way through Mahabharata and Ramayana, you'll see this quality is there. That even the most atheistic and demoniac personalities, they were still very respectful to Brahminical culture. And they kept their word. And like Duryodhana on many levels, because at this point in time, Duryodhana is the king at this point. Right? He's ruling at this point. But he actually wasn't a bad king in many ways. But then the problem was he was envious of devotees, which is a problem. And he was not completely subordinate to Krishna, which is also a problem. But on many other levels, they were good kings. And Jarasandha, the same thing. Such good character. Now, you also see in the Mahabharata with Karna, right? Karna was given, he was made a prince by Duryodhana. When Drona finished training the boys, and then they did a exhibition. Right? And Arjuna showed his power. And then Karna appeared at that time, and he could do everything that Arjuna did. So they saw that Karna was as powerful as Arjuna. And he challenged Arjuna at that time. He said, only one of us will live. He said, only one of us can be the most famous bowman. And Arjuna took the challenge. They were about to fight. And the sun went down. Dronacharya said, no battle. And the sun has gone down, so then they stopped. Right? But then Duryodhana, he saw how powerful Karna was, so he went to Karna, and then he said, I will give you a kingdom. So he made him a prince. And then Karna said, because you have given me this, because that's what he wanted, he didn't have a kingdom. He said, because you have given me this, he said, I vow I will always remain loyal to you. So even later on, when Kunti came to Karna, she said, actually, you are the eldest. And if you come now to your five brothers, they will surround you, they will worship you. Yeah, they will make you the king, and the five of them will defend you and fight for you. He said, so we don't have to have this battle. They will all surrender to you. You can be the emperor of the whole planet. They will fight with you to defeat you. And but Karna said, no. He said, I have taken a vow. I will remain loyal to Duryodhana. That's how powerful these personalities were. Right? But unfortunately, they sometimes take vows for the wrong people or the wrong reasons. So here also, and Karna also was like that. If anyone begged charity from him, he would give charity to the person. So Indra came dressed as a
Brahmana.
Brahmana. And when Indra came to him dressed as the Brahmana, right, he says, "Oh Brahmana, you have come to me while I'm doing my worship. How can I please you? What charity can I give?" He said, "Give me that kavach, and those earrings." And so he cut the earrings off and cut the. I mean, that also shows how extraordinary these people are. Someone asks you for something, even from your own body, you take it. He was born with the armor. He had to literally cut to give it to Indra. This shows how extraordinary these people are. You know, if they make a promise, that's it. If they take a vow, that is it. Right? We make a promise or take a vow, then maybe, you know, it's like sometimes like, you know. Yeah. I vow to you, I promise to you, but only if I want to do it. Oh, like that. Not so good in Kali Yuga. You see people everywhere. Make promises, make vows, but then cannot uphold it. We should not be like that. Devotees should not be like that. Yeah. And these people, they were not like that. That's how powerful they were. Karna even. Jarasandha. Any brahmana came to him, he would give whatever they asked. So Uddhava, he says, go dressed as brahmanas. So that's what they did, the three of them. Yeah, Bhima was 12 foot tall. You know, that's like, that's huge. It's like, it's right up. He's very, very big. You know, Arjuna and Krishna were 7 foot tall. So they're like up to the top of the door. Not the top, but the door part. Krishna and Arjuna were that big. And Bhima was even like, you know, up to where that blue thing is almost. He was huge. Yeah, about that. Maybe just under that, but he was big. Yeah, and they came dressed as brahmanas. These three huge people like came through some cloth and they came, you know, "Maharaj, please, can we beg charity? What do you want?" We'll see as the pastime comes. So but the point that we learn here is the character of the people. That's what we need to learn. But not the way they do. They had some discrepancies. We should not have the discrepancies, but we should also learn to be like that. Develop the kind of character these people had in the past. Not easy in Kali Yuga. We're so contaminated, it's not easy to do, but we should strive to be like them. So, any points? Okay. Bhima should go to him disguised as a brahmana and beg charity. Thus he will obtain single combat with Jarasandha. And in your presence, Bhima will no doubt kill him. So what does the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita say? Wherever there is Krishna, master of all mystics, wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will always be four things. Victory, morality, opulence, and extraordinary power. Those four things will always be there. Wherever there is Krishna and the pure devotee. So you see, why was Bhima destined to be victorious? Because Krishna was there. Yeah. Because Jarasandha and Bhima were equally powerful. Same as when at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhima fought with Duryodhana. After the battle was finished and they had the duel with the clubs. Actually, Duryodhana almost won that fight. He almost won. But then Krishna, he indicated to Bhima how to win. Here, hit the thigh. Like that. So that's how he defeated him. Avijara Sandhi, you see, when it comes up in the chapter, he also indicates to him. You know, he gets the piece of grass and he goes, and it shows him how to kill him. So the point, and it happened to Arjuna as well. You remember Arjuna took the vow? He would kill Jayadrath. Remember the Mahabharata? He took the vow because Jayadrath arranged to kill Abhimanyu, Arjuna's son. And then Arjuna took the vow. He said, the next day, if I do not kill Jayadrath by sunset, I will enter into fire. So then it took him all day just to get to Jayadrath. Because Duryodhana put him at the very back of the army. It took all day just to get through everyone to get to him. And then he was just getting to him, and the sun was just setting. Right? And the sun went down. Right? Krishna said, now. So he went, shot the arrow, took his head off. His head went and landed on his father's lap in the forest. Right? That was a different part of the story. And then the sun came up again. Just rose slightly. Right? And then Krishna said, look, the sun is still there. He has fulfilled his vow. And then Duryodhana said, Krishna has performed mystic power. the sun has set. Krishna is a mystic. Because when they tried to capture Krishna, remember? When Krishna went to before the battle, Krishna said, please, don't fight. He said, just divide the kingdom. And Duryodhana said, capture him. And then Krishna, all these personalities came out of Krishna. The Pandavas came out, the demigods came out, and Balaram came out, everyone surrounded Krishna, and everyone went back. And Duryodhana said, he's a mystic. Be very careful of him. So here we are seeing that wherever there is Krishna, there will be victory. Krishna will always, because Krishna says in the Gita, declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never perish. So if Krishna is protecting you, you cannot perish. And then if Krishna wants to take you, then nothing can save you. That's up to Krishna. Any points? Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva act only as your instruments in cosmic creation and annihilation, which are ultimately done by you, the Supreme Lord, in your invisible aspect of time. Okay, so Niraj, you like to read?
Uddhava here explains that in fact Lord Krishna himself will cause the death of Jarasandha and Bhima will merely be the instrument. The Supreme Lord, through his invisible potency of time, creates and annihilates the entire cosmic situation, whereas great demigods such as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are merely the instruments of Lord's will. Therefore, Bhima will have no difficulty acting as the Lord's instrument to kill the powerful Jarasandha. In this way, by the Lord's arrangement, his devotee
Bhima
will be glorified.
Any points?
There's a pastime where Bhargava, who was grandson of Bhima, son of Ghatotkacha, he was destined, and Krishna somehow cut off his head, but then it was mentioned whomever side Bhargava will fight will win, and Barbara had vowed, like, whoever is losing will fight from that side. So Krishna met him and he cut off his head, arranged to be his head to be cut off so that he does not side the Kauravas, and then blessed him like he had a desire to see the whole war. So Krishna arranged that he will be able to witness the whole war, and at the end of the war everyone went to Barbara, and everyone was Bhima asked, like, you saw the whole war, who was the best of the warriors in the whole world? And he said, I only saw one person fighting, and that was Krishna. And he was arranging everything. So real hero of the whole war was Krishna. So he elaborated it, but he said everything was done by Krishna himself. And that's how he won.
That's in Mahabharata?
It's in Mahabharata.
So Krishna also says in the Gita, he calls Arjuna Savyasachi. He actually says in the Gita, he says, actually all the warriors are already killed. He said, but you can take the glory. So it is up to us if we want to surrender and we want to serve Krishna, then Krishna will arrange that the devotee becomes glorified. So it is up to us. Krishna said to Arjuna, it's already done. I've already killed everyone in the battle. Either you take the glory and do it. And it says that Arjuna killed 2/3 of the army by himself. Because every time he would release an arrow, he'd chant a mantra and then thousands of arrows would spread out. So it was literally like he would just be, Krishna was driving the chariot. Arjuna was shooting so many arrows, just it was like lawn mowing. You know, when you mow the lawn, and the grass is just going. That's what it was like. It was just the chariot was coming, everyone was just falling. So Arjuna, he took the credit. Now, we remember who was the great warrior in Kurukshetra. Arjuna, he defeated Karna, killed Jayadrath, so many things. So he took the credit. So this is the point that's being made here. If we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will arrange that you may get some credit. But the point is the service is already to be done. It's just a matter of you doing it on Krishna's behalf. If you don't do it, someone else will do it. We're not interested in the credit, but the credit will come. But then that's up to us, whether or not we want to fulfill that service for Krishna. That's our only credit. In their homes, the godly wives of the imprisoned kings sing of your noble deeds, about how you will kill their husbands, enemy, and deliver them. The gopis also sing your glories, how you killed the enemy of the elephant king, Gajendra, the enemy of Sita, daughter of Janaka, and the enemies of your own parents as well. So also do the sages who have obtained shelter, who have obtained your shelter glorify you, as do we ourselves. So the devotees, once they surrender to Krishna, they always have faith that Krishna will
protect them.
And in one sense, this is like the measure of our Krishna consciousness. Krishna says at the end of the Gita, Mame kam sharanam raja. In one sense, that's the whole Gita in that one line. Mam ekam sharanam raja. Because Lord Chaitanya lists there are 26 qualities of a devotee in Sanatan Shiksha, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And of the 26 qualities, which one is the overriding quality? Krishnaika Sharana. Krishna Eka Sharana. So, Mam Ekam Sharana Braja. That's basically the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Now, when Burujan Prabhu wrote his commentary on the Gita, then he called it Surrender Unto Me, which is basically that one line. That's the whole Gita, if you understand it. Right? That's the one instruction to take from the entire Bhagavad Gita. So then, Sharanagati. Sharana, it has six components. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we think that Krishna is our maintainer and Krishna is our protector. They are two of the qualities of surrender. Right? This is what surrender means. Krishna will maintain me. Krishna will protect me. And Krishna will test every one of us, right, to see if we have that faith. He will test you. He'll send tests into your lives. Do you actually see him as your maintainer? Or do you think you can maintain yourself? Or be maintained by others? And do you see Krishna as your protector? When you're in danger or difficulty, do you surrender to Krishna? So Krishna will test all of us to see. So in one sense, this is the essence. So we're seeing here that all of these great personalities, they knew that Krishna would protect them. And it's very nice because Uddhava, he's indicating to Krishna, he reminds Krishna about the gopis of Vrindavan. Because what Uddhava is thinking, because we have to understand the 10th canto as a whole. That's what we were discussing last week in the opening class. That's very important to understand. The 10th canto as a whole. If you haven't listened to the first class that we gave last week, try to listen to it because we try to give an overview of the 10th canto. So, in the 10th canto, if we look at it from a holistic point of view, Krishna is always thinking of Vrindavan. And Uddhava was sent to Vrindavan by Krishna, right? End of the third, very end of the 30s, beginning of the 40s, chapter 40, 30, 37, 38, 39, like those early chapters, and then a little bit later, chapter 47, right? Then Uddhava is sent there, 46, 47, right? Then we hear about Uddhava actually going to Vrindavan, he witnessed it. So he was very much in the consciousness of Vrindavan also. And Krishna and him would speak about Vrindavan. So now Uddhava is thinking, okay, now you're going to go to Indraprastha. At the moment they're living in Dwarka, which is a long way. Now they're going to go to Indraprastha, and very close to Indraprastha, Hastinapur, and very close to Hastinapur is Vrindavan. You know, it's that side, they're back on that side of India again, in the middle. At the moment, they're right over on the west. So he's thinking, if you go over there, right, you can take care of Jarasandha, right, take care of Shishupal, take care of Dantavakra, then you can head down to Vrindavan, right, and see the gopis, because you said you would come. So he is thinking like that. So the gopis, they always bubble up, just like when you're cooking and bubbles come up. So gopis, they always emerge. Resins Vrindavan always emerge. And actually we'll see in this section before the 10th canto, Krishna and Balaram both go back to Vrindavan after Dantavakra is killed. But you have to wait. Oh Krishna, the killing of Jarasandha, which is certainly a reaction. Yeah, I just read mine. Yeah. Oh Krishna, the killing of Jarasandha, which is certainly a reaction of his past sins, will bring immense benefit. Indeed, it will make possible the sacrificial ceremony you desire. So if you're impious, it will be punished. You cannot get away with impiety. Even sometimes in your life, you might see someone who is committing sin, but they're getting away with it. But no one gets away. You just wait, and then they will be punished. Even if they're not punished in this life, it will come in the next life. You don't have to worry. If you see someone doing something improper, they will suffer. So Jarasandha, he imprisoned all of the kings unnecessarily, so his life will be shortened. And there's a very important point to understand. When you commit sin, your life is shortened. The duration of your life is shortened. It says your piety is taken away. It says your beauty is taken away, your wealth is taken away, all of the positive things from a material perspective that piety brings, it all gets taken away when someone is sinful in due course of time. So you can see some sinful people, they're very, very rich and all these things. It will all be taken away. Pious people are rewarded, but impious people are always punished. And if they're not punished to our vision, they will be punished later on. And if they're very sinful, then Yamaraj himself will take care of them. And that's very scary. Yeah, you don't want to meet Yamaraj. Because Yamaraj is very scary to meet him.
So, how about Indra stealing Prithu Maharaj's 10,000th horse sacrifice horse so many times? Is that sinful or not sinful?
Yeah, but then he got punished. Indra got punished. There was punishment there. Indra got reactions. So.
You're describing that loss, not in that chapter, I guess.
Yeah, if you read that section, yes.
He just begs forgiveness from Prithu Maharaj. Story is over.
Yeah, okay, so then maybe...
Eyes all over the body.
What's that?
He had to have eyes all over the body.
So that's a different pastime.
Yeah, maybe different pastime. But the point is, you nullify the reactions when you beg forgiveness. Just like if you offend a devotee, you'll get reactions. But then if you go to the devotee and beg forgiveness, then the reaction is taken away. So if you are begging forgiveness, you can clear the offense.
So that's like doing simple activity, doing atonement. That's a different thing.
It depends on the circumstance, who is involved and what's involved. For devotees, we don't have to necessarily do atonement.
Also, Prabhu, it is said that Indra is actually very beautiful, but he wears that just because he doesn't want to appear as a mask or something. So, some devotees in the Bhagavad demonstration that he's actually very beautiful, though he's a Mahajan. And then he wears that kind of thing when the souls come, the sinful, the seeking that fearful.
Good. Sugadev Goswami said, O King, Devarsha, Narada, the Yadu elders and Lord Krishna all welcomed Uddhava's proposal, which was entirely auspicious and infallible. So everyone was very happy by Uddhava's proposal, we go, we kill Jarasandha, and then we perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. But Krishna's grandson, his name is Aniruddha, and all the young warriors, they were not very happy. Because instead of going straight to Jarasandha and just killing him, they were going to do it very kind of slowly and gradually. They were going to go to Indraprastha, pick up Bhima, and Bhima was going up there, so they weren't very happy. So the point is, we need elders in our lives. We need people who are older, wiser, who can give us guidance and instructions. Because if you leave it to young people, the earth becomes a mess very quickly. Aniruddha and the young, they're just going to go up there and just attack. And that's what we feel like when we're young. If someone says something to us, we just feel like, we're just going to attack them. And then some older person, older devotee, he will say, hey, just relax. Take your time. So that's what we need. You need older, more senior devotees that can guide you and say, do it like this. Take your time. The almighty personality of Godhead, the son of Devaki, begged his superiors for permission to leave. Then he ordered his servants, headed by Daruka and Jaitra, to prepare for departure. O slayer of enemies, after he had arranged for the departure of his wives, children and baggage, and taken leave of Lord Sankarsana and King Ugrasena, Lord Krishna mounted his chariot, which had been brought by his driver. It flew a flag marked with the emblem of Garuda. So I was thinking this while I was reading this today. This is much more pleasant than the way life is at the moment. Everything is like very grand and very colourful and very festive. And if they want to go somewhere, they get chariots, they decorate everything. People play drums, right? Krishna marches out. It's like a very grand kind of a situation. These days, we just get in a car, drive to Tullamarine, get the airplane, have to line up in a queue, You know, it's not the same experience. You know, sit there for 12 hours, you know, with your little video screen and... Was that?
In economy class,
yeah. For most of us. Has anyone ever flown business class? No one's ever flown business class? Yeah, see, we were just economy class. At least business class is just slightly better. But you see, when they do it, it's so pleasant and so enjoyable. And, you know, they pack everything, and it's like it's a whole festival kind of moving along. Everyone's talking and chatting, and so totally different mood to the way life is these days. And nothing is pleasant these days. Back then, everything was very enjoyable. I mean, it would have been like a great adventure. You know, I would have loved it. You get on the chariot, you drive off, and drive through all the different countries on the way, and, you know, as it describes here, they pass through all the different things. Which verse are we on?
14.
As the vibrations resounding from ridangas, berries, kettle drums, conch shells, and gomukhas filled the sky in all directions, Lord Krishna set out on his journey. He was accompanied by the chief officers of his corps of chariots, elephants, infantry, and cavalry, and surrounded on all sides by his fierce personal guard. Lord Achyutya's faithful wives, along with their children, followers, followed the Lord on golden palanquins carried by powerful men. The queens were adorned with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant oils, and flower garlands. And they were surrounded on all sides by soldiers carrying swords and shields in their hands. On all sides proceeded finely adorned women, attendants of the royal household, as well as courtesans. They rode on palanquins and camels, bulls and buffalo, donkeys, mules, bullock carts and elephants. Their conveyances were fully loaded with grass tents, blankets, clothes, and other items for the trip. The Lord's army boasted royal umbrellas, chamara fans, and huge flagpoles with waving banners. During the day, the sun's rays reflected brightly from the soldiers' fine weapons, jewelry, helmets, and armor. Thus, Lord Krishna's army, noisy with shouts and clatter, appeared like an ocean stirring with agitated waves and timangila fish. Honored by Sri Krishna, the chief of the Yadus, Narad Muni bowed down to the Lord. All of Narada's senses were satisfied by meeting with Lord Krishna. Thus, having heard the decision of the Lord and having been worshipped by him, Narada placed him firmly within his heart and departed through the sky. With pleasing words, the Lord addressed the messenger sent by the kings. My dear messenger, I wish all good fortune to you. I shall arrange for the killing of King Magadha. Do not fear. Thus addressed, the messenger departed and accurately relayed the Lord's message to the kings. Eager for freedom, they then waited expectantly for meeting with Lord Krishna. As he traveled through the provinces of Arnata, Sovira, Marudesh, and Vinashana, Lord Hari crossed rivers and passed mountains, cities, villages, cow pastures, and quarries. After crossing the rivers Drishadwati and Saraswati, he passed through Panchala and Matsya and finally came to Indraprastha. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki. So next week we will continue. Finish the chapter 71 and we'll continue to 72. Srila Prabhupada Ki.